Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. ebaymotors.com.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp, Fightful.com, here with a name you know. We got Brian Myers. They got Figure Wrestling Federation live Thursday, April 8th at MajorWFPod.com. There's so much going on with you at any given time. And you got the Impact stuff going on. You got Figure Wrestling Federation going on. You got the Major Wrestling Pod Network, which has just expanded even. Like, you got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, I think I just love wrestling a little too much. You know, I just can't get enough. I mean, I have the Creator Pro Wrestling Academy where I'm training guys. Yeah. Like, I just love it in so many ways and so many aspects that I've just really spread that seed, if you will, a little too far. But I'm very happy. So, I mean, it's nothing but good stuff, but I'm constantly busy because of it. But it's all good.
But I mean, when people like ask me, oh, do you ever get tired of wrestling? I'm like, no, not really. Not really.
If you're a real nutcase and you love it like people like you and I, yeah, no. I don't know. Nuts. I literally go to bed every night watching wrestling, like after a full day of doing wrestling-filled stuff usually. So pretty messed up.
I'm going to conduct this interview almost backwards from the way that I usually do it. I solicit like viewer questions, reader questions, and usually I save them for the end. But I got some really good ones that I think you might like.
Sure,
and now here's the thing. I like anonymity from these people, so we'll give first name, last initials. The first one is from Matt C. from Long Island.
Oh, man. Who could this guy be?
Who says, do you know your major pod password?
First off, this guy, let's just disclose this right away. He's away on vacation. Okay? Right now, in this moment, as we're doing this interview, he's away in a rented house on vacation with several beautiful women surrounded by booze, and he's decided to troll me on this midday interview. Like, get a life, Matt. Go,
we have another question from Long Island. It's from a Smart Mark S.
Oh, man. Here we go.
And it says, can I have Saturday off? And then Matt C. followed up with no immediately.
Yeah, that all checks out, yeah. The things I bother Mark Sterling with and the things that Matt bothers him with are night and day. Yeah.
We also have an Ethan P. from Canada.
Oh, man.
Who requests that I ask about Zack Ryder's knees.
Oh, man, they're shaky. We all know that. He had to request a sit-down interview with Impact last week because he couldn't come out to the ring. His knees are so bad. So you tell me.
And then
by the way, have you ever had this many celebrities come out for your questions?
These are completely anonymous people. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm just saying.
But I had one specific internet troll, and I'm not sure who this is, but the name reads Maxwell Jacob F. From Plainview, New York, who said, what's it like to train the greatest wrestler who ever lived in MJF?
Oh, I thought he'd say Chris Statlander, but he's saying MJF. I'll have to think on that.
Well, he sent several others. He said, please recount the AIW CPA dumpster incident in your thoughts.
Good Lord. That's I don't know. What's this show rated? Is there a rating on this?
No. Anything goes.
I don't think we can tell that one. But
well, we'll follow up. He said, talk to the people about Walter the Janitor.
Oh, Wally, he's the legend. He's a Creator Pro legend, living legend.
And then he asks, how many coconut waters did you have to throw out at Creator Pro?
Oh, dude. MJF's hard to explain for people that know him truly. Like, he is wise beyond his years in some aspects, and then in other aspects, he's about as immature as my 4-year-old. So I think he just grew up in a house where his parents just cleaned up after him after every little thing he did. So every day he had this giant Zico coconut water he'd bring to practice, and sure enough, I'd find a 3/4, you know, emptied coconut water that I had to throw out every day at my school because he treated it like a dumpster. Yeah, but I'll give him a pass on that because for whatever reason, a lot of my students have that problem. I'm like constantly cleaning up empty, you know, energy drinks and water bottles and stuff, and I want to pull my hair out, but it's too beautiful, so I can't do that.
I wonder if you'll give him a pass for our last reader question. He says, DJ Hyde and Drew Cordero have had a huge hand in Bear Bronson's success. Have you ever formally thanked them?
I have a big to-do list that's pretty low.
Pretty low on the list.
Yeah.
Well, I gotta say, I've mentioned this to Matt when he's been on the show before, like, the show that you guys do got me back into figure collecting for the first time since I was.
We love hearing that kind of feedback.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome, and it was specifically the Toy Vomit episode. I watched it, and I had just started traveling for this job. AEW launched, and it kind of reinvigorated traveling media, and I was like, oh, I need to take down the city that this is in. That way, when I travel, I can go there.
Yeah.
Well, then you all said Lexington, Kentucky, and I was like, that's 45 minutes from my house.
Awesome.
And I've been there like every couple weeks since.
It's the best.
Is that something that you guys are hearing a lot of? Because when you guys talk about something on the show, it changes the market for a product even.
Yeah, I mean, that was like we're just literally being ourselves. I say this all the time. The podcast is literally the conversations that Matt and I were just having in the car. And now we're just recording it. You know, that's how real and true to life like our collections are and our obsessions and stuff that go along with it. And then it just, you know, these out loud thoughts got to the ears of people like you. And then you get these sentimental feelings and you go back and get maybe this, you know, wrestling figure you had when you were a kid that you loved or the one you never had. And it just makes you feel good. It's hard to explain. You know, we always say you can't go in a time machine, but you can kind of, you know, get those sentimental feelings back. You know, maybe there's something attached to it, like you know your dad bought it for you and he's since passed on. You know, and we've had people come out to us with some pretty unbelievable stories. You know, and I think a lot of people, you know, the go-to thing is like, oh my god, a podcast about wrestling figures, but it's so much more than that, and it's become so much more than that. And you know, we are just grateful that, like, you know, there's that many more like-minded people that dig what we're putting out there, because we're literally just being ourselves, being idiots, talking about wrestling like we would have in the car.
Well, admittedly, I was not collecting figures anymore, but I was still watching the stuff on YouTube. I was still listening to the podcast because it was something that I had liked in the past. And then I was a little down in the dumps last, I think maybe May or June. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to refamiliarize myself with some stuff that made me happy when I was younger.
Totally,
and
yeah.
That helped. I started to collect loose Jack's BCAs. And awesome. I think you did the complete history of the ECW figures. I saw the Taz figure and I was like, that's the dopest figure I've ever seen in my life. I got to collect those now. So, I mean, like, you guys, when you talk about a certain product, even, like, it has an effect on the market.
Absolutely, but that's all like by mistake. That's sure. we're just and then a lot of it, like, it's part of like the news, almost like kind of our job, like, hey, did you see how much that Rock card went for this week? And then we got to talk about it, you know. So it's just gonna bring more interest to it, but that's by, you know, coincidence, default, however you want to look at it.
I mean I just think that's so cool. And now, I mean, you guys did a signing at Toy Vomit in Lexington, and I was there. The line was wrapped around the store. Like, I mean, this stuff has blown up and taken off, and my God, sometimes even Hornswoggle gets a payday off of it.
Yeah,
you guys are like creating jobs out here.
Yeah, just like he was in DX, he's our unofficial mascot, right?
I love it.
We love it too.
I love it. One time I interviewed Hornswoggle. It was in Winston-Salem at WrestleCade, and Ethan Page was there, and I was like, okay, you complained about clickbait. Tell me what you want the title of this article to be. And he looks square at Ethan Page, and he says, Ethan Page will never make it in the wrestling business.
I thought he was going to say interview with the Six Mania man, Dylan Postel. That's his go-to. God. He was part of Six Manias. I don't know if you know that or not.
Yeah, was he? Six?
Yeah.
God almighty. I actually wanted to ask you about one of the more fond WrestleMania moments in recent memory, you breaking your losing streak. And I mean, that was something that you had embraced, the losing streak, because, and you said it in a video that they produced for it, like, I'd rather be talked about than not talked about. And that was a great way to do it. How far ahead of WrestleMania did you find out you'd be winning the title at WrestleMania so close to your home?
The 3 days, 4 days, maybe the most.
Wow. Because I remember.
We didn't even know. We left that Raw the week, you know, with that 6 days out. We weren't even sure if we had the match or if that was really happening. It was kind of a. Not to steal from another podcast, it was rumor and innuendo. We didn't even, like, no one had told us officially or anything. So
it was in a program, wasn't it? Like, because that's when I first heard about it, when we were doing the news updates.
I'm pretty sure, like, we were at like a maybe a like an access appearance or something, and our phone started to blow up that someone got the program and it was in that thing of all the matches and stuff. We're like, okay. And then maybe later that day, the producer like contacted us, like, hey, I got your match, it's happening. So. It was very last minute.
Who gave you that news? Because, I mean, that's pretty big news to hear.
I want to say Matt and I were sitting together at the signing for Access, and like it was like Twitter, everything, you know, all of the above. It was all kind of like, you know, happening at the same time.
So, I mean, that was a very wild situation for a few reasons. One, so close to home. Two, ending one of the biggest stories that you had in WWE, which a lot of people were getting behind. Three, you were facing now FTR, who had just asked for their release like 2 months before that and had the titles. How did all that go, like, when you're leading up to it?
It was I say people this all the time. I embraced the streak so much, and it honestly was so much fun. Like, I it was like a magic trick. I took the politics out of pro wrestling, and that's impossible otherwise, right? Because I'm, you know, everyone's showing up hoping like, oh, is this the day? Am I gonna get a push? Am I gonna win this or that? I literally took all that out of my life. I'd show up, be like, what's this guy's finish? Oh, awesome, I'm gonna take it the best I possibly can, because that's literally my job now, because I've completely embraced the streak, and it was so much fun. So what I would try not to do, and I never really did, was think about how it would end, because I felt like I would just drive myself crazy, and I was really enjoying it, so what's the point? So I never could have conjured this all up, and like kind of like you're saying, it all happened so fast. I really had no time to think about it, or kind of, you know, it was such a whirlwind, really. But I mean, it all worked out. Like, it was a for real dream scenario. Hometown, literally, from my wife and my daughter. You know, I got a kiss from them in the front row after I won the belt with my best friend in my hometown, in Jets inspired gear in the stadium that I go to as a fan. You know, it's just, there was a lot of things attached to that which were pretty surreal, you know.
It can't get any better than that. Like,
and it was like a whole week of, like, we had all these awesome appearances, and we ran we had our second ever live major pod show that was a big success that week. Like, Matt and I, we just had a really, really incredible week, you know. Even the next night, like, Barclays was rocking, and we had another really good one with Revival, and just, it was just really, really cool. Not that it even matters, but Kofi's one of our friends for 15 years. We, you know, started in developmental when all three of us were literally couldn't be next to nothing, nobodies, you know, and to see him on that same show do what he did. Like, there's just so much good feelings attached to that day and that week. I'll never forget it. And I'll forever be grateful for that. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, if I never wrestle in WWE again, like, I don't want to say who cares, but I'll always have that moment. You know, it's pretty special.
It feels like that was so long ago because of the 2020 that we experienced. Like, as we film this, there has not been a WrestleMania in front of a fan since then. And
pretty
it
wild,
feels, that makes it feel so long ago, but it's, I had mentioned how the Revival had asked for their release beforehand, but when in my experiences with them, it was not about them being champions. It was not about them winning matches. It was more about, we want a tag team division built.
Yeah.
Like, so I would imagine they were more than happy to do business with you, right?
I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure they saw the big picture, like, their heels. It's my hometown, the streak. Like, there's meat on the bone of that. Like, it wasn't just this, you know, nothing event, or, you know, losing it to a mishmash tag team that made no sense. Like, these two guys that have been, you know, on and off tag team and former champions since they were 18, you know, like, there was a lot to it. So they were totally cool about it. They were down for everything, and you know, the stuff with them and their contract and lots of, I mean, that was their business. I never even asked them about it, but I totally get their stance. You know, these guys are so passionate about tag team wrestling, and for the longest time, WWE is not really the place to get your fill of it. You know, it's just it's Vince's playground. Everyone's playing it, and he doesn't seem to be too ever into the tag teams, you know. You know, or they're the first thing to kind of go to the wayside when he gets focused on something else, I think.
And now they've joined one of your students, MJF, in the Pinnacle. You see stuff like that, I mean, a team that you had a connection with through an important moment of your career, now they're having a hand in an important career that you have helped mold. You're seeing this with regularity now, like people all over the place that you have had a major hand in. How does that feel for you? Because I would imagine you're nowhere near done in the ring yourself. So to be able to have so many successful careers launch out of something that you created, it's got to feel great.
Yeah, I think that's the big difference with my school is that I'm still like fully in the fight of trying to be a big time mega wrestling, pro wrestling star myself, you know, as long as my students. So I think that's another thing that really separates Creator Pro from other schools is that I'm there like literally doing these drills because I need to work out too. You know, the guys are in there with me. Like I'm not just standing around pointing and stuff, you know. And I, for the other side of that question, I just saw Tony Khan last week at the Impact tapings. I said, man, I watched that Revolution pay-per-view and I was like, it was weird. For the first time, I was like swelling up with pride to like watch a wrestling event that I had nothing to do with, you know, because I just had so many people on this show that I was either like very, very good friends with or I've had a hand in, even like Reynolds and Silver, you know, guys I've been friends with for years and years and years and helped every which way I possibly can. And I've stuck my neck out for them so many times to be like, these guys are awesome. They just need a chance. They just need more eyes on them, you know? And, you know, Max Caster, I was like, it was crazy, man. It was so like, I said, just said, thank you, man. Thanks for, you know, believing in my guys and trusting them. Cause like, it was so surreal to watch that event. I was like literally swelling with pride watching it.
How have your interactions been with Tony Khan when you've seen him backstage? I mean, he seems like a pretty, pretty easy guy to deal with.
Oh, he's awesome. So the first time I ever got to talk to him was on my podcast. We interviewed him.
Yeah.
About the new action figures, and that conversation was about action figures, but of course it just was all over the place because he's a legit wrestling fan,
yeah,
just like me and Matt. So like we were shooting the shit about like everything in between, and it was like so fun. I'm like, oh, this guy's great. And, you know, he didn't seem like the boss of this, you know, $1 million wrestling company. He was like so fun and easy to talk to, especially since we had something so so in common, and it was awesome. So yeah, it's cool for me to see Tony.
My first interaction with him was him randomly dropping in my DMs and telling me happy birthday. And I was like, you know, that's never happened with Vince.
never had.
I don't know. Linda McMahon.
I think we could go back to that. What was that? M. Cardona question. Yes. I don't think Vince knows the password to his Twitter account. Fair. to even write you that. So
fair. Do you remember when there was the cranky Vince account?
That was so inside that I don't know who it was, but it was somebody close to the company for sure.
That was the rumor, was that
there's no way that was just some random fan, unless there was like a super fan who's seen every shoot interview ever and documentary and was like full-blown obsessed with Vince. I don't know, because it was too, if I was a betting man, I'd say that was somebody.
People accused JBL of it because like there was like a tweet that went out at the same time.
Yeah, but there's never been any real evidence, right? Yeah,
that's a future investigative piece for me. Like, sure, I gotta find
dark,
out who...
dark side of the ring, cranky Vince coming soon.
I mean, that was a wonderful piece of Twitter at any given time. We've spoken about WrestleMania week, we've spoken about the show. You have the Figure Wrestling Federation Live coming up. I dig the Figure Wrestling Federation so much. like things from the Hog and Henry Godwin coming out, man. Like
ridiculous. It's another one of those like, everything about the major pod is fun, okay? That's the whole point. Like, we wouldn't do it if it wasn't fun. And the whole point of its existence is making you remember all the fun things about why you fell in love wrestling in the first place, you know? That's why everyone loves it so much. So for those people listening that have no clue what we're talking about, it just spawned out of, like, it was just another happy accident, man. We were looking for bonus content, and we had a live draft of action figures, and it just got out of control, and everyone loved it. Then they were like, what if we use those figures we drafted and book a show, and everyone loved it, until it spawned into its own miniseries that got so out of hand that I was writing an 11-seg television show, bro, every week. It was so much freaking work on top of the podcast and being a pro wrestler and a dad of two and, you know, a loving husband. There was so much that went into it. And then outside of like, you know, living in this COVID world, we decided like, man, a main thing that Matt and I would love to do is run a live wrestling show, you know, and have, you know, whoever we could get, if it's, you know, the Headbangers, whatever, just make a fun event, you know, and run this show and call it the FWF, the Figure Wrestling Federation. So with the restrictions of what we're living in and the best way to do it, we kind of stole from the Talking Shopomania business model. And I'm super excited for people to see this. It starts April 8th and we'll go a week. You'll be able to purchase the stream through a Patreon. It's not a recurring Patreon. Don't worry about it. It's a one-time charge. And then the whole thing just goes away. So don't worry about that. There's a couple different tiers for a lot of cool different merch, exclusive merch, even a micro brawler, which people are crazy obsessed with, and I promise you people will want this one. It's very, very cool. On top of that, you get the stream of this amazing wrestling card with, you know, Shane Douglas, Tommy Dreamer, myself, Smart Mark Sterling, Bear Country from AEW, VSK from AEW Dark. It's a lot of fun stuff. So we put a lot into this, a lot of money, a lot of effort, but I'm so excited for our fan base to indulge. So can't wait for April 8th.
The draft specifically, I think, is what made me decide to collect Jack's BCAs again, because that's where I left off. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, man, this is cool. So from that draft, I was hooked.
Oh, awesome.
Because I found myself sitting there watching you all draft figures and, like, criticizing the picks. And I was like, yeah. Oh, Jesus, man. Yeah, what am I doing here?
Yeah, yeah. See, that, like, not if people care, but Matt was picking, like, the sentimental ones. Okay, well, I had this one growing up, so I wanted that. But I'm like, no, I'm picking the best cosmetically pleasing one, in my opinion. You know, the one that, you know, is the most toyetic, if you will.
Of course. Another aspect, because as I mentioned, you're doing everything. Extreme Conversations. Man, the first episode of that I got to listen to was just incredible, and it's such a great look at ECW, and I know that you're an ECW fanatic. How was that for you, getting to do that? Which, I mean, you had personal relationships with most of these people anyway.
That's how it came about, really. You know, the podcast was growing, and we had this idea to make it a network, in which we've taken on the Game Marks podcast, which is a wrestling video game podcast, which is really cool. So if that's in your wheelhouse, you'd be all about it. We took on Off the Hop Rope, which is podcast that pairs pro wrestling matches with a beer, so you know, almost like your wine and cheese. And Matt and I wanted to bring something to the table, so he's doing MC True Lion Story, which is an incredible retrospective, 10 years to the date of his True Long Island Story that just blew up and really changed the business. And that's just like getting started. That's a weekly podcast, and as they keep getting into the nitty-gritty of that, I think there's going to be a lot of probably a lot of big clickbait, like you were saying, out of that, because that story is just unbelievable, and it's never really, really been told. And I want to bring something to the table, and everyone knows me, knows that, like, ECW is my be-all, end-all. That's my wheelhouse of pro wrestling fandom. I literally begged Tommy Dreamer when he started his podcast to make his podcast an ECW podcast. He didn't listen. I've had in-depth conversations with Raven where I said, dude, you got to do this, blah, blah. He didn't do it. I've asked Conrad Thompson to come, you know, figure out, you know, something on his.
I feel like Conrad wants to. He's waiting for the right person type.
I agree. So I was just like, you know what? I have literally befriended all these guys and, you know, just gravitated to them anytime I've ever been around them or share a locker room with them, that they're literally in my phone. And most of them are my friends that I speak to on a regular basis. So I'm like, you know what? I could do this myself. So, yeah, we put out the trailers out now, or the pilot episode. That's Heatwave 2000, which is so much fun. But the way that Mark Sterling and I have decided to present it requires so much, like, fine-tuning and editing. It's just not like an interview and then that's it. It's going to bounce around and tell stories and go from one guy to the other and things like that, that we decided we're going to just collect it all, edit it all, and just drop it one day, like Netflix style, so you can just binge listen. So that's the pilot that's out, and the following five episodes are coming, hopefully early summer. We've already got a lot of it in the can. It's been so much fun already, but I got to keep tracking these guys down and getting these Zoom calls done and getting all this information. So I'm looking forward to it.
So excited to hear those, because that first episode was just so good. It was actually at that same WrestleCade that I was talking to Hornswoggle at. They had an ECW panel, and it was like, Rhino was there, just incredible was there, Tracy Smothers, rest his soul, was there, and it's like, there's still so many people around that that have such good insight. I mean, Don Callis, a guy that you work with,
there you go.
There are just so many people, so I'm really, really digging that, and you guys are putting out such great stuff over there. You had mentioned Talking Shopomania earlier. Tell me, what was that process like? Those fellas are wild.
I mean, Luke Gallows is one of my best friends in the business. He's like probably one of my favorite people I've ever met in my entire life. Like, he entertains me more than anyone I've ever met in my entire life. Like, if we were deserted on an island together, I'd probably be all right, because he'd probably just keep me entertained and be just so funny. Carl Anderson's a great dude as well, who we got, I got close to, you know, we traveled together in WWE and by default, you know, through Gallows. And yeah, they came up with this wacky idea, and I was 100% down from day one to go for the ride. And the two tapings I've been a part of have been just pure fun. Like, you can imagine, like, you guys are seeing it, the finished product, like being there filming it is equally as fun. So I know there's more coming, and I can't wait to be a part of it. So it's almost kind of mind-blowing that, like, they pay me for it, to be honest with you.
It's mind-blowing that they can still pay people for it with the amount of money that Gallows keeps saying that he's spending on this thing.
I mean,
but they're making money.
They're making it back, yeah.
They're making it back.
You gotta spend money to make money, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. So you popped up an Impact. I've really loved this run that you've had there. Who reached out to you to make the Impact deal happen?
I want to say within, like, the first week of the mass firing, Tommy Dreamer called me and gave me, like, the hard pitch about Impact. And I'm glad he did, because I've, like, kind of fallen in love with Impact. It's so fun, and they just let me be me, and because pro wrestling is art, you know. I get to, like, you know, there's no restrictions, really. Obviously, I can't do whatever I want, but I'm having fun, and, like, you know, almost in, like, a carefree setting for the first time in my career, you know, letting, you know, no restrictions and just letting it all go. And it's been such a freaking blast. And then on the other side of that, I work 3 days a month. I can't beat them. You know, I'm a dad of two. I've spent all this time with my family and watching my kids grow up, and I'm literally only gone, you know, 3 days a month. And it's the safest, best way to film that product. Obviously those 3 days we work hard and long hours and you know, getting all that content in, but I've loved it. I've loved all the opportunities to talk and cut promos and stuff, which I never really had a chance to do in WWE almost ever. So it's just been a blast. My friends are there, like, you know, Gallus and Anderson, now Cardona, you know, Swaggle and Ethan Page when they were there. So I've just had a blast. I don't have a complaint in the world about it, to be honest with you. I think it's a growing product that I know people have soured on over the years, but I think they need to tune back in and give it a chance, because it's just so different. It's so far from, no offense, the Dixie era, if you will. You know, it's a completely different product, completely different show. And there's just a lot. I mean, the women's division is incredible there. There's a lot of young talent, you know, Chris Bay and Jake Something. There's guys there I think are going to be big, big stars in the business.
Heard they're bringing in some new women, too. Heard there were some new ones at the tapings, which I'll probably put out there over the next week. But,
oh, nice.
Okay. Heard a few good names. I mean, they're restocking the cupboards in that regard, too.
Yeah, it's great, man.
So I've noticed, like, their taping schedule has been a bit more regular this year. Obviously, last year it's going to be spaced out a little bit more, about every 7-8 weeks. But this year it seems like every 5 weeks or so you guys have
about,
been going. Yeah,
about.
Because I know you all go back for the Rebellion show and all that. Mm-hmm. How have you liked that? Because, as you mentioned, 3 days every month, that's pretty solid.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, I got to stay at my school and stay in ring shape and stuff, because that's not for me. I'm too obsessive. Like, I have to, like, wrestle once a week, or I feel like my body uncalcifies and I lose my wind. You know, it's like that time off is a wrestler's worst enemy type scenario is always in my head. So I've gotten used to the schedule, and I've gotten used to the no fans, you know, that you need that extra adrenaline kick that just does not come without fans, you know. And that's just me being honest, you know. Hearing a live crowd, nothing beats it. You know, wrestling is a live performance art. It is supposed to be in front of people, just like a rock show. You know, it's not meant to be presented this way, but we're doing what we got to do to get, you know, the product out there and to keep it going, you know, during this pandemic. So it is what it is. And I don't say I've gotten used to it, but I've gotten kind of used to it. You know, I can kind of just put on my work hat and let's go to work, you know, and do what you got to do.
I do feel like we've seen a lot of people step up their promo work when, like, especially in WWE, where they can't rely on somebody telling somebody to go out and say, "All you people," like, every single time. Like the stuff with Edge and Orton last year, I was like, "Oh my God, like, this is top notch stuff." All due respect to the people on WrestleMania, I think the most excited I am is to just hear how people react to literally anything.
I know, right? Because it's like you don't even really know who's getting over, who's not. Like, there's no true sense of it, because whoever's booking the show can really...
Vince's dream.
I know, it is his dream. You can manifest anybody's push and whatever, and there's going to be no backlash, you know, until those real butts are in the seats again.
Oh, man. Oh, here's sort of a reader question I hadn't even... thought to throw your way. So toy department in Cincinnati. That was one of the early videos you guys did. I actually visited that last week when I got LASIK.
Oh, cool.
When you were there, you all saw the painted LJN prototype, Sergeant Slaughter, right?
Yeah, it's a big time piece.
My boss bought that.
Oh, really?
He bought that. Okay. I got a raise off of that piece. I was hey, man, come on.
It was driven to him, right?
Yes,
so rare it wasn't trusted in the mail, right?
Yes, and he's got like a gigantic LJN collection, very, very robust one. One of the, he says, the most complete there is. He asked, when you threw out the 10K number for Cardona to pay for that, did you expect that he would buy that?
Yes and no. Yes and no. He gets, and as you can see in those videos and those vlogs, he gets very excitable, you know, pretty easily. And then it could be something in the moment that he'll think is like, has to happen. And then 5 hours later, he'll be in his hotel room going like, what did I just do? Which I think happens a lot. You know, he did that. There's a Figure It Out episode where he buys the Big Boss Man 2-Up, the Hasbro 2-Up. And I mean, that got out of hand. The guy guilt tripped him and said, well, this would be the exact amount of money I could take my family to Disney this year and blah, blah, blah. Like it got way out of hand and Broski wound up buying it. But then he realized he didn't want it and he flipped it. And I think he made a couple bucks on it. So
nice.
It's all, you know,
it's
all
tax deductible for you guys now, though, right?
I got to talk to my guy about that. It's got to be at this point. Yeah,
it's got to be. I mean,
I just got my PayPal report, which I've never had to do before because I've never had, like, you know, money coming in and out of my PayPal like this.
Yeah.
The money comes in, but boy, does the money come out. And it's all figures, man. I was like, yeesh.
So you guys are feuding an Impact right now, and I really dig that. It's you saying, listen, I want out of your shadow. I don't want you here. I don't want this. I'm doing this on my own. How often do you have the people that come up and they're like, yeah, how do you all do a show together if you're feuding on Impact?
Not at all. Because I think wrestling fans are have moved on from that. Like, no one in wrestling is trying to. Do we really think Crazy Steve is from the undead world or whatever? Or
yeah, Rosemary? Fair.
You know what I mean? Fair. Like, we play characters. It's like a movie star. You don't, you know, Tom Cruise isn't a superhero, guys. I'm sorry. I hate to break the news to everyone, but like, that's fine. I think that's perfectly acceptable. It's a more intelligent and fun way to perceive the business. I hate the old timers. Stuff like, oh, this feud's never gonna work because you guys are doing a podcast together or whatever. It's like, no, this is a separate thing. This is the character I play on this television show. It's not, they're already, if they're already a fan, they're seeing my social media and seeing that I'm not this ruthless bad guy anyway, period. I'm a freaking family man hanging out, running around my house with Shrek ears on with my daughter. Okay, like, that's so, for us to be so naive to think that that's what people are thinking, it's just lame and silly and old and passe. Like, we play characters and we tell stories and that's it. You know, you can't sink your teeth into it any more than that. And that's fine. You go to a movie, you don't go to a movie and sit there and judge the whole time and think, well, this isn't real. This isn't real. This is real. That's not it. And that's the way you should watch wrestling too. It's the same exact presentation. So, you know, we're not tricking anybody and you're not tricking anybody. And that should be the situation moving on. I'm so sick of the old timer, you know, view of that.
You're going to get excommunicated by the Church of Scientology for your comments on Tom Cruise, though.
Oh, I mean, sorry. In some circles. All right, I'm sorry. In some circles, he is a superhero.
That's my clickbait title right there.
Yeah, there you go.
Got it. I know that when you were in WWE for a while, you worked as a backstage producer. How long did you do that, and how was that?
It was like a little over 2 months. I had this crazy weird pain very close to my private parts. After a loop one time, and I was honestly baffled and slightly concerned. So I finally got to the doctor next day and got it checked out, and it was a hernia. It was just really, really low on my abdomen wall. So whatever, I got surgery set up. It's very minor, 2 months, you're out, whatever. I was like, oh, this is actually kind of sweet. And then I had that all set up, told the office, it was all good to go. And then like the next day, Carano called me and said, hey, Vince saw your name on the injury report and he'd like you to be a producer while you're out and learn that side of the business. So that was pretty unique and flattering invitation that I didn't feel like I had the opportunity to turn down.
Sure.
And I actually wound up working more hurt than I would have as talent, you know, compared to like my dots in my calendar and what I would have done.
So you go in there with the suit, the full nine when you
do that, I'm at both TVs and pay-per-views, suit, everything, you know, and I've never been in this element, and I'm so far removed from college or anything like that. I was like I mean wide-eyed, like, what's happening, people, you know, because it's just, I was so removed from any kind of situation like that. I've just been a big dumb wrestler my whole adult life. But it was invaluable. It was cool. I think it made me a better, much better performer, even because I'm seeing that side, or at least seeing what his vision is, you know, like a deeper, I feel like, I mean, the boys would hate me for saying this, but I feel like everyone should be in that meeting, because then we'd all have a better understanding, and then we can go do it and get it done instead of like he said, she said, hearing it from the, you know, 3-4 people down, you know, it's just ridiculous. So, but it was invaluable. It was very, very cool learning experience. But on the flip side, I think I was 18. I was, I don't know, 33. So as soon as I got cleared, I went to Vince and said, "Hey man, this was so flattering. Unbelievable learning experience, but please, please let me wrestle. Like Father Time's going to get me at some point. Let's not do it, you know, on my own."
How did he respond to that?
He said, "Great." He said, "I would just love to have you do it one day when you're ready." I said, "Me too, pal. Thanks."
I mean, that's pretty cool.
I scurried down the hallway thinking, "Oh, I don't want him to change his mind."
I mean, that's pretty cool that he has that confidence in you to direct what's going on here.
I totally agree. It was a flattering situation, so I did not complain about it once.
Who did you work with the most? Because I know there are some wrestlers that have, like John Cena had Arn there, like, for all of his matches. Was there anybody that they would specifically have you work with?
So in that scenario, because I was, like, an intern, I just shadowed every day. Okay, go with Dean Malenko today. Do whatever he does, and you basically have his matches too. So it basically you'd have me and Dean Malenko, me and Tyson Kidd, you know, whatever. Yeah. So that being said, I think Tyson Kidd is going to go down as one of the greatest wrestling producers of all time when he's ready to give it up, because he's just getting started and he's just such an asset to the business.
I used to get like copies of the rundowns, which drove WWE nuts, but I would like see a batshit crazy match and I would go back and look at the rundown and it would be like, yep, TJ Wilson. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, that's pretty cool. And like fans would be really excited to hear that too, that somebody who physically was not allowed to do this anymore was helping put together this awesome Seth Rollins match.
Yeah, totally. And he's one of my best friends, but also like kind of my motivation to be like, well, this guy loves wrestling so much that he literally gave his neck for it, and he still loves it so much that he's doing this.
Yeah.
So like I owe it to him that I got to wrestle as long as I physically can. And then I could do this too, you know what I mean? Because he would have wanted it that way, you know?
He still trains here and there, doesn't he? I see like some stuff online here and there.
He has like a school in Tampa, I'm pretty sure. And I'm not too sure what the grounds are of it, but it's something in the works for sure. But he's one of the most passionate guys I've ever come across about the business, and just so knowledgeable. And like I said, he's going to be one of the, you know, the way people talk about Arn now, they'll be talking about him in a couple of years.
Was there anybody else besides him that you would work with and you would specifically pick stuff up from and you're like, damn, I like working with this producer?
When I was younger, it was always Fit Finley was the one that I always appreciated. And we Matt and I got to wrestle him so many times that it really changed my career, you know, being there with him, like, on, you know, loops and tours and always, you know, learning from him firsthand. And he doesn't learn by speaking. He shows you, you know, physically that way. So that was invaluable. And I always liked him as a producer too, because I think he had a unique spin on things that were made stuff, you know, a little more creative, I thought.
So that WWE return, who gets in contact with you about bringing you back? Because you were one of the names that we heard at that time, along with like Shelton Benjamin and a couple others, when they were like, we got to bolster these rosters because we're splitting them up. Who gets in touch with you about that?
Yeah, I think that's all it was. They decided to split the roster into that draft. And I thought they needed more bodies. And I guess what they decided is that they wanted people that knew what they were doing, how to work WWE style, television style. You know, they wanted guys who could just be thrown on TV like the next day. So they compiled a list. I heard they put it in front of Vince, and Vince handpicked the names off of that he wanted. And I was one of them. So Mark Carano called me and offered me the job.
And again, I mean, you've got several instances of this where Vince is hand picking you for things. Like
somewhere along the lines in my first run, I had a match and I don't know who or when it was, but Vince like soaked it in. And what he got out of it is that Karakins is a really good hand. Like he's great at what he does. Like he can make other people look great. Something along those lines, which is a good and bad thing for sure. Like, I don't think he saw me as this like Roman Reigns megastar, but he saw me as someone that knew what he was doing, that he could trust, you know, that wasn't selfish. And there's a lot to that. I take pride in that. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. And it got me insane amount of opportunities, you know, training with The Rock or things like this, or even getting this job, you know, the second time around, whatever, or being a producer, you know. So I'm not upset by it by any means, but that's certainly what happened in some capacity.
And I mean, I think that's been proven at this point between the show and when you all do videos on YouTube, you've done production work, you've been a wrestler, you're training people, and not just training people. It's not like you're training, like, you don't have a track record, like top high level people now. So you've got your hands in a lot of different things there. I'm surprised WWE did not do with what you all have, like they did Up, Up, Down, Down. I thought for sure they were going to try to co-opt that. And I know you all had figured it out. Were there any talks?
There's a lot to that question. One, Figure It Out was completely Matt and I and a guy that works for WWE.com. Mm-hmm. No, it was never financed by WWE. We never got a paycheck from it. We're legit spending our own money on all those episodes, like not reimbursed, nothing, absolutely nothing. No hotels. We didn't get a rental car, nothing. Waking up early, shooting that stuff on our own. He's editing on his own and putting it up on the YouTube. We pushed that. We said, hey, this is great. You check it out. We got all the way to like somebody, I couldn't even remember his name. He was like the president of the network at the time. And we wrote him an email and said, hey, we've been doing this. Take a look at it. And they wrote back like, this is not up to network standards, blah, blah. It could never be aired on the network, blah, blah, blah. A couple weeks later, it's on the network without anyone telling us or anything or saying a word to us. Yeah. So a lot of weird things like that were just never, I don't know. It's just nobody cared. Then we literally had the idea for the podcast and went to WWE and said, this is the Up, Up, Down, Down of figures. And that makes this company so much money. It's the same exact thing, literally a lateral movement, if you will. I don't know. Like, I mean, to make more money for everybody. And for whatever reason, I mean, this is multiple times. This wasn't one talk, like several times we tried this and it just did, like, no, it went on deaf ears again, and to the point where someone said, don't mention it again. So we're just like, okay, we'll do it on our own.
And so a few years ago on Fightful, we were looking for a Friday show, and we were going to do 1 week video games, 1 week action figures, 1 week merch, and 1 week title belts. And then I heard your show and I was like, well, we ain't doing better than that. So we're not even going to try that. Nice. And I mean, you guys have branched out and done a lot of those things. Like, it seemed like such a slam dunk idea. And then WWE announces this A&E show. And I don't want to point fingers or anything, but I'm like, you know, I could think of two pretty good hosts to travel the country and find rare shit.
Hey man, for whatever reason, they just did. I mean, I don't know. I don't have the answers to any of this. I can also tell you this. I don't know if I've ever said this publicly. One of the last things I did for WWE was shoot like the sizzle reel for that.
Okay.
Like, I went up to, which was actually just cool as hell for me as a fanboy. Like, I went up to the warehouse and got to like dig through all that cool shit. So I have like pictures of me holding the Smoking Skull belt. They're like me wearing Jeff Jarrett's light up cowboy hat on my phone and stuff, and I spent the day there and shot the like sizzle reel stuff, like, hey, what happens when WWE's treasures are found, but whatever, you know. And then that's what came of it, you know. So they kind of knew what was going on, but I don't know. So it's all to me like a big kind of just blessing in disguise, because whatever went down with WWE, and I don't know because I'm not there anymore, that third party stuff and all that,
yeah,
I mean, something would have gave something. And I don't think in a good way. I think something bad would happen where, you know, we wouldn't ask to sign it over or ask to give it up, and none of that would have happened if we were there. So
yeah,
it was like I think we really avoided an ugly situation.
That has affected people to varying degrees. Like, you see for sure Paige and Adam Cole, and they're just like, say something to me. What? Because what are they going to say to Paige? Hey, lady who we don't use and can't wrestle, don't make almost $1 million a year. Hey, Adam Cole, who makes more off of Twitch than from us, stop doing that.
But I think
you got Jessamine Duke, who is like, she wants to be a pro streamer, so she's on Up, Up, Down, Down now. It affects people in varying degrees.
I just don't. The money aside, which I understand, the money you can't be ignored because some people make some big money doing this. But how can they have control of people's hobbies?
Yeah.
That's really weird to me, man. Like, that's crossing a line, like, I think, you know?
To me, you want your wrestlers doing this because pro wrestlers,
then they're offering more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Impact signs me, right? what else am I bringing to the table now? All this stuff I'm bringing, you know, firsthand of Creator Pro and who's there and who's ready to rock and there's future talent. I'm bringing all, you know, the podcast and everything that comes with that. I just think that I'd rather have a performer like that that's multifaceted, and I don't know. It's very odd.
To me, it goes in.
Don't have the answers.
To me, it should go in like a circular motion. This is for me, the outside looking in. WWE should be able to recruit people and say, hey, look what our platform can provide for you. You can, in your free time, go do this Twitch. And then you hope that it works the other way, where people that aren't wrestling fans tune in and they see Adam Cole streaming a video game and go, this guy's cool as hell. Let me see what he does on Wednesdays.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I completely agree, but you and I don't make those decisions, pal.
Yeah, that we don't. That we don't. Oh, man. Shout out to my boss who did buy that painted LJ and prototype, spending like $500 to troll me with a Roman Reigns cameo last year, though. I mean, that was
damn.
Yeah, it's
an expensive cameo.
Yeah, it's absurd. So as we wrap up, we've seen a lot of people that you've teamed with like go on to do stuff other places, like Lance Archer. Lance Archer's having a good run in AEW right now. He had been established before you guys teamed up. But I mean, obviously that was not like a career height for either one of you guys. What was the mood like when you guys were teaming up, knowing that both of you could accomplish so much more?
There's a decent amount to this. So one, I went to FCW, and I want to say within the first week, I got the lay of the land and I saw he was down there, and I pitched was a spinoff of Rock of Love, which was like a big show at the time. You remember that? I wanted him to be, I forgot what Bret Michaels' bodyguard name was, but I wanted me to be like the love lord, and then he's like my muscle, my roadie, whatever, and like we'd be a team, and fell on deaf ears. And then a year later, they just literally randomly threw us together. That being said, and I say this all the time, and I'm sure it hurts Broski's feelings, but Lance is my favorite tag team partner I ever had. Like, we just clicked. It was just, I liked the big guy, little guy, like, dynamic we had. It, like, kind of helped out in that regard. We had a lot of kick-ass matches. We were, like, squashing dudes, and then we'd run in and leave, like, Matt Hardy and Christian Lang and beat up MVP and, like, doing all this cool shit. And then it literally just one day died, and, like, they were just done with it. And I, to this day, don't know why or who or what happened, but, like, just dead as could be, and I have no idea why, because like obviously we both know what we're doing and we were having fun and I thought it was going somewhere, but and then he got let go like very quickly after, so I have not a clue why, and I wish that would have got a little more time, because I think we were really clicking and having fun.
Yeah, when I saw that team come together, it was gosh 10 years ago now.
It's like, over 10 years. Yeah,
like, man, that's a good pair to put together. And especially as we've mentioned in the past, WWE doesn't always necessarily put as much stock into their tag division as they should. I was like, it's got that not little guy, because you're not little by any means, but everybody compared to Lance Archer,
yeah, of course,
looks little. It's got that sort of throwback feel to it.
Yeah, it was fun. It was like so fun. It's just sad that it was really, if you look back on it, it was so short lived. It was probably, I think, in totality, like a little over 3 months. It's crazy.
Ooh, let's have you rank your tag team partners. I want to make somebody mad.
Man. I honestly, my second favorite is Tyler Rex. So Broski's like three.
Oh, no.
Tyler Rex and I, we had great chemistry too, man. We were always coming up with awesome ideas. And that was like at that weird time where NXT was like an internet show and nobody gave a flying fuck about it. And like, there was like, that was the most amount of like, no restrictions ever in WWE that I ever had was being on that show. Like, you could do things that would just fly so under the radar. Like, that's how I established my cane that I ripped off from Brian Pillman at the East Every Arena. Like, I just wanted to have a cane, and I literally pitched it, and the guy's like, sure. Like, the writer of that show was this guy, Tom Cassiello, and he had just started, and I believe he came from soap opera, so he really not that he familiar did. With wrestling. So all these, like, you know, EC3 and Fandango and me and Rex, we would pitch things, and he would just be like, sure, sounds great. Like, not like he hadn't really got the lay of the land yet that you're supposed to, like, you know, kill all these ideas and do whatever, you know. So it was fun as hell, though. So just nobody really saw it.
Did Tyler Rex, now Gabby Tough, did you ever hear about how John Cena went off about the finish being used, the burning hammer?
Either this is one of those things, like, either I was there or I've heard the story so many times from so many different people that I feel like I was there, and I can't
Supposedly John Cena just went up and was like, did you do my finish? And I had heard this. Mike Bennett told me that he had done, like, he was emulating Crime Time's taunt one time, and Cena went up to him and he's like, did you do the You Can't See Me?
Oh, man. And
Bennett was like, no, sir. No.
I mean, in John Cena's defense, Tyler X at the time was doing a Burning Hammer. John's doing the FU. It's the same exact move, except the guy is positioned one way or the other. Gabe grabbed the guy and, like, kind of fumble fucked it, so he was facing the same way as FU, and it wasn't FU. Like, I mean, he hit it FU. Like, yeah, I mean, it wasn't much of an argument. Like, he messed up. Like, he was in the wrong, for sure.
I think that was conveniently left out of when I transcribed that story.
I think the follow-up is John gave him the talk, like, don't let that happen again. And then he went and did his finish the regular way the very next night, and John still said, hey, what the hell? But he's like, so now I think it's a story of where, like, John never really saw him wrestle, probably, or didn't know that was his finish, and it's just a big, big, big miscommunication.
So as we wrap up, of course, guys, check out Major Wrestling Pod, all the stuff that they got there, but Figure Wrestling Federation Live Thursday, April 8th. I'm so excited for it. But, I mean, tell people what they can find, what they can look forward to.
Like I said, it's just going to be pure fun. It's not – I said we were stealing from Talking Shop. I meant in the way that we made it how we got it done in the presentation. Other than that, we will have, like, a comedy match on it, but the rest is just gonna be a kick-ass pro wrestling show. Like, we're trying to, like, you know, really get after it. It's not like a goofy this or that, but it's gonna be, like, a lot of fun. And like I said, there's a lot of options on how you want to take this in. You know, you can order just the stream. There's other crazy merch options, including a exclusive micro brawler. It will be the only way to get it, and that we'll be up for a week. You'll have a week to order this, take it in, that stream, and then it dies forever, and you won't be able to get any of this stuff. So exclusive pin, exclusive trading card, exclusive micro brawler. There's a couple of really cool, like, very unique signed items that will be super limited. So if you're really in the hunt, you got to have your finger on the pulse, and stay tuned to everything Major Wrestling Figure Podcast for more details as they come.
Guys, check it out. Brian Myers, I want to thank you so much for being so generous with your time. I've been after this interview for a while. So glad we could finally make it happen. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man. I hope it was worth your while.
It was. got lots of the clickbait out of
it. There you go. Whatever you want. Yeah.
Tom Cruise is seething right now.
Here, this will be a clickbait. Brian Myers says MJF is the second best Max to ever come out of Creator Pro.
Fantastic. Until next time, guys, we're out.